Hello, and welcome to episode 68 of Public Interest Podcast with your host, Jordan Cooper, where we interview politicians, activists, advocates, and others who seek to improve the state of the world. We're here today with former delegate John Herson of Montgomery County, Maryland. John, how are you doing today?
How are you? I'm doing well.
Great. The first question I'd like to ask you is, what are you currently doing, or what have you ever done, to advance the public interest, and why?
Well, what I'm currently doing is I am working for an association in Washington, where I do lobbying for them on Capitol Hill. But I guess if I really had to sort of square my life away in terms of what I've done in public service, obviously you mentioned I was a delegate in Annapolis, representing part of Montgomery County. And when I was in that role, I served in several positions in the legislature, which I think helped me serve the public better. And I think I enhanced the condition of people in Montgomery County. I was majority leader under Speaker Cass Taylor. I was the chairman of the Environmental Matters Committee and also the chairman of the Health Committee. And while I served as chairman of the Health Committee, there were a number of issues that came before my committee, which I think advanced the public welfare. I guess the one that I'm proudest of is the fact that we created a commission that provides funding for health clinics around the state called the Maryland Community Health Resources Commission. And that commission continues to operate. I'm still chairman of that commission. And we've given over $55 million to the health clinics over the years, enhancing delivery of services to those who can't afford it. That bill, creating that, was my bill, and I've since served on the commission and also as chairman of the commission, and I continue to do that. So right now, today, we have a RFP on the street looking for health clinics to apply for approximately $4 million in funds for this year. So that's one thing I've done. The other thing I've done in my service in the legislature is I was the author of the bill that implemented the federal CHIP program, Children's Health Insurance Program. As a result of that, 17,000 more kids I know in Montgomery County received health care under that program. So I guess that would summarize what I think I've done in terms of public service.
Well, it's quite a lot. So you expanded Medicaid, expanded funding for recipients of grants to improve healthcare for those in the lower end of the socioeconomic spectrum, and you shifted through a lot of different leadership positions. It sounds like you ended up in leadership in the health committee. How was it that you transitioned from being a freshman delegate, meaning your first year in office, to being majority leader, environmental matters committee chair, and then the chair of the health committee? How did you transition from one to the other? Obviously, it was through the good graces of Cass Taylor, the speaker at the time. Can you tell us a little bit more about how you moved so perhaps quickly from one leadership position to the next?
Well, when I became a delegate to Annapolis, I was assigned to the Economic Matters Committee, and Cass Taylor, who was a delegate from Western Maryland, was the chairman of that committee. Actually, I ended up sitting right next to the next speaker of the House, Mike Bush, who's also on that committee. Cass and I became very good friends and colleagues and worked very closely together on that committee. So when he became speaker after Clay Mitchell decided to retire, he tapped a number of us who had worked with him on that committee for leadership positions. Mike Bush became chairman of Economic Matters. I actually became chairman of another committee that people don't know a lot about, which was called the AELR, the Administrative Executive Committee that reviews all regulations that are issued by the administration and approves them doesn't approve them, but reviews them, if you will, because These are executive decisions on regulation.
The Administrative Executive Legislative Review Committee, which operates full year, including in the nine-month interim when the legislature is not in session, correct?
Correct. So I served in that capacity, and part of, if you will, CASA's inner circle in that capacity for 2 years, and then I guess it was the 94 elections took place, and the person CAS had appointed as chair, majority leader, Kenny Masters, was defeated. So came to appoint somebody as majority leader. That's what CAS appointed the majority leader at that point.
What was your role as majority leader?
Hmm?
And what was your role as majority leader?
Well, majority leader is sort of the guy in the legislature who herds cats. Basically, you're the one who's trying to make sure that when bills are brought to the floor by the committees, they are, if the committee has a recommendation to pass them, which they often do, they won't bring a bill to the floor that they don't want to pass. It's your job to try to make sure it happens. So you have a whip count. You make sure that the various factions in the Democratic side of the House of Delegates are in line with the language of the legislation.
Just to interject for a moment, for our listeners who don't know, could you explain what a whip count is?
Sure. So there are many, if you will, appointed deputy whips, the phrase, who actually go out and talk to the members of the Democratic legislature and some of the Republicans as well to find out how they feel about a particular piece of legislation. So if you have a very important bill coming to the floor, what you want to do is you want to send all your whips, your deputy whips, out to talk to their group of people and find out how those people feel about this legislation.
So basically, you don't want any surprises.
Right. You want to find out if you've got, 71 votes to the legislation.
And if you don't
have 71 votes, you tell the chairman not to bring the bill to the floor because it's going to get defeated.
So very few bills end up on the floor of the legislature for a final vote that get defeated.
That's correct. It happens, but it's not a good result. A good result is that you've always got the votes for all the major bills, anyway. A lot of minor bills that usually are not controversial, so you don't have to whip those because you don't you're not particularly opposed by anybody. So you figure those are going to get through, so you don't worry too much about those. But you have to worry about the big ones because you don't want the speaker to be embarrassed. If there's a major administration bill that you're trying to pass, you don't want the Democratic speaker to be embarrassed by a loss of that bill on the floor of his house.
You mentioned the Maryland Community Health Resources Commission as a bill that you initiated and eventually passed. Can you talk about how you ushered it through the bill to law process as the chairman of the Health and Government Operations Committee and what power you had as a chairman to control that bill and help navigate it through the legislative process?
Well, usually, chairmen usually have ideas that they want to push through, that are outside of maybe the administration's thinking or the speaker's thinking. So you have to design that legislation and get the support in your own committee to pass it out. That's important. Which is usually not hard since you're the chairman. Most of the people on the committee want to help their chairman. So getting that bill through initially was not difficult, getting it through the House. The harder part was getting the Senate to adopt it.
Why was that difficult?
Well, they have their own priorities. You don't control their body. This is an initiative of the chairman of the other House. So there's always some skepticism about the legislation. In this case, it's interesting. This bill passed in 2000, 1973, I think, went over to the Senate and died on the floor of the Senate on Sine Die night by one vote.
And Sine Die is the last day of session, correct?
So that was, you know, disappointing, but you come back the next year and you start to work. It was easy. We knew it was going to pass the House again. So we probably worked a little bit harder trying to make sure the Senate was with us.
Did it surprise you that it failed the first year?
Not really. I was surprised, actually, it failed by only one vote. But it was interesting because this was during the Ehrlich administration.
Who was a Republican.
Right. And
you were a Democrat.
Yeah, he supported the bill. So I think that may have been part of the problem over the Senate. But the second year I put it in, I worked closely with Matt Middleton, who's a senator from Southern Maryland, a Democrat, who headed the Finance Committee in the Senate, and that's where the bill was referred. And worked closely enough with him that he ended up co-sponsoring a Senate version. And so once that you had a bill like that cross-filed, they call it cross-filing, you have the same bill in both houses, that makes it much easier because everybody gets to take credit for the idea.
Credit matters.
Yeah, I think, you know, people want to, if something's going to pass and become law and going to be a major program, I think the more people who are invested in it and take credit for it, the better, because it's more likely to pass that way. So,
interesting. So the more diffuse the approbations go for the passage of a piece of legislation, the more likely it is to pass, because the more legislators who are therefore capable of returning to their constituents and saying, you sent me to Annapolis to be productive and look what I've done.
Correct. That's exactly right. So that's what happened in this case. So it passed, and that was good. And as I said, I mean, you know, shows you how good it is when you've got over $55 million has gone out to the community, to community clinics. And that money also, by the way, is good because it leverages non-state funds. So you've got federal funds that are being given to these clinics based on the fact that they already have support from state.
Are these clinics federally qualified health centers?
Some are. A lot of them are. But they are also just some are religious-based clinics. Some are based just in the community. Some are health.
How did you get the idea to create this fund?
I'm sorry?
How did you get the idea to create this fund?
Well, it was a period of austerity at the state level, and there was a decision that had actually been made several years earlier to require some nonprofit healthcare insurers who had not been paying the health insurance premium tax in the state. They thought that was not fair to all the other health carriers, health insurance carriers, and they decided to apply the premium tax to those nonprofit health insurers. The two largest were CareFirst, Blue Cross, and Kaiser Permanente. So when the premium tax was applied to them, a portion of that premium tax, not all of it, but the funds that are raised through that premium tax to those two entities applied in law to the Maryland Community Health Resources Commission. So that's
in effect, this was like a budget neutral proposal, and that's how you got the Republican administration on board.
Correct. So it was, you know, it was, and those funds went for other things as well, but at least a portion of it was given to the Community Health Resources Commission.
So let's talk a little bit about you being in leadership, but now you're actually a lobbyist of Congress. What is it that, you know, we haven't really spoken yet about your motivations for entering the Maryland General Assembly. So what originally inspired you to get into the legislature? And then why did you decide after achieving very high heights in the legislature and being in leadership, what led you to decide to leave the legislature and politics entirely?
Well, I wouldn't say I'm entirely out of it. I am still chairman of this commission, which I'm happy about. I'm still very active politically in the Democratic Party in Montgomery County. But you're right. It was a big decision to, you know, a life-changing event to actually decide to, you know, move to the private sector. I think primarily my motivations were personal. I had spent 15 years in the legislature. I had, you know, was in the middle of trying to get my two kids into college and pay for it. And so it was just a personal motivation, and I thought I had done a lot of good work, but it was time for me to, you know, have a different kind of focus. And I had a really good offer to come to this association, and I decided to take it. I just thought it was time, and I didn't think there was going to be, and I think time has proved me right, going to be a lot of movement up for me in the House of Delegates. I didn't want to particularly go to the state Senate. So it was just a personal decision that I thought it was time to focus on something else.
When you reflect back upon your years in the Maryland House of Delegates, what do you miss most about it?
Oh, I think the policy work. I think, you know, dealing with different policy questions, particularly in healthcare, because I really enjoy the complexity of healthcare. I guess one regret I have is that I wasn't there when the Affordable Care Act passed at the federal level, because I think that means a lot to how the state deals with healthcare issues. So that's a little bit disappointing that I wasn't there for that, but that's what I miss the most, is the policy stuff.
And do you work with health policy in your current position at all?
Yeah, a little bit. The association I work for is the Personal Care Products Council, which represents all the cosmetic companies, and cosmetics are regulated by FDA. So we've been in a 7-year-long effort to try to pass major reform of the cosmetic regulatory structure at FDA.
And just for our listeners, the FDA is the Federal Food and Drug Administration.
Right. Thank you. And so it's still very much in a policy level, except that it's not, as, if you will, a diverse plate of policy issues. It's very concentrated in one area. I miss the diversity of the policy questions that I used to deal with on the health level. And I think it's always fun, and I enjoyed my 15 years in legislature, where you meet diverse people from around the state. And that was interesting. I mean, just getting to know people from different parts of the state, different parts of the local government. So it was, that was really interesting, and I really enjoyed that.
It's unique that you had, or is it unique that you had such a close relationship with an individual from Western Maryland, which on the surface shares very little in terms of policy priorities or demographics with the portion of Montgomery County that you represented?
I think it's interesting when you say they don't have the same opinions about things. You're right. On basic issues that are important to the Democratic Party, like gun control or abortion rights, folks from other parts of the state don't share those, who are Democrats, don't share those basic tenets, if you will, of Democratic policy support. However, the thing that everybody shares, it seems to me, in the legislature is a desire to help the citizens of the state. And one of the things about Cass Taylor that I found intriguing and interesting was his, every day he was there, he was trying to make sure that Western Maryland, which is very challenged economically, was getting support from the state. And he, every day, he thought about that. So I think in a lot of ways, I had respect for him because of that thing that he needed to do, which obviously, while we want to support the, you know, Montgomery County with state funds as well, and we do, it's not the same challenge. You know, the challenge in a economically depressed area like Western Maryland or parts of the Eastern Shore, you know, that their challenge is much greater. And so I had a lot of respect for him for the fact that he was working so hard on that. And but the, I guess the similarities between everybody who goes to the legislature, that at least I've met, are that they want to do something good for their constituents. And I think that that sort of unites not just the Democrats there, but even the Republicans and the Democrats together. That's institutional to all of them. They want to do something good for their constituents.
Well, John, I appreciate your time this morning. You've spoken about wanting to do something good for your constituents and having concrete examples throughout your legislative career of how you've made life better for Marylanders. You have expanded access to health care for those who most need it. You've worked to make sure that other areas of Maryland get the help they need to try to drive their economy and their lives forward. You've built partnerships based upon strong personal relationships. And at the end of the day, it sounds like you can rest assured that Maryland is better off because you've been around. So, John, I'd like to thank you so much for joining us for this episode of Public Interest Podcast. And this has been episode 68 of Public Interest Podcast, where with your host, Jordan Cooper, where we interview politicians, activists, advocates, and others to seek to improve the state of the world. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time.